I please the court. My name is Michael Olshansky. I represent the appellate in this case. Mr. Pletenoff and a number of other individuals got together and conspired to defraud citizens of the United States by advertising for sale numerous items such as boats, yachts, and represented over the internet that the purchasers could deposit their money in foreign accounts, which would be secured and would be held until the purchase of the vehicle could be completed. This was a fraudulent scheme. The people defrauded, deposited their money, never got the property that they were supposed to get.
All right, so cutting to the chase here. All right. The trial court found that as to the 15 alleged victims who are at issue in this case for sentencing, that it was sufficient that the government represented that they had received, it had received these bank records. And to the extent defense counsel had raised some questions, the prosecutor made certain representations about what the records, which were not before the court, stated. And the court said, I can sentence on the basis of proffers. So where is the clear error, as the government suggests?
What we're suggesting is that this is very similar to the decision reached in the case of FAM, where the Court of Appeals decided that the evidence of a conversation between the pre-sentence report writer and the bankruptcy trustee with respect to the number of victims in the case was not sufficient to establish by a preponderance of the evidence that these were actual victims. We would suggest that this is the same situation in which, having not contacted the victims and having not found out from the victims whether they were in fact had lost money as a result of this scheme, that this is no more relevant or no more evidence of the existence of these 15 unidentified individuals, unconfirmed individuals, than the case of FAM, so that the court could not rely on the proffer because the proffer was based on the government's conclusion, which could not be reached without contacting the victims.
Well, the sentencing guideline commentary talks about written statements of counsel or affidavits of witnesses. So all the government presented was the one record as illustrative.
Yes.
And made representations. So is it your argument that that is not sufficient under the guideline?
Yes, that's exactly what our argument is, because again, it's the government's burden to go forward with the evidence to establish by a preponderance that these people were victims, and simply the proffer, we believe, without the government being able to show the court the records, without being able to represent that based upon their analysis, without contacting the alleged victims, that they could establish victimhood in this case.
What about the trial court's view that since the defense had received these records during discovery, that was sufficient,
I think the trial counsel made the point that having received these records, having received these records, that wasn't sufficient to establish the government's burden. In other words, it wasn't for the defense to get the records to enable the government to establish proof by preponderance of the evidence, that having received these records was not sufficient for the court to decide that the government has met its burden, that the government had to establish this themselves and not rely on it turning it over to the, it would be the situation in which you have evidence that's turned over to the defense that's never presented at trial, that would not be sufficient to establish a proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's not the defense's burden to say, yes, well, we have the records, so we must agree that the defendant has, that the prosecution has established that there are these 17 additional victims.
What about the spreadsheet?
I think the spreadsheet has, again, the spreadsheet is in the pre-sentence report, and the spreadsheet is to a large extent based upon the same sort of proffer that the government has tried to make in the case, that they've examined the records and they're satisfied that without having talked to the individual bank holders, bank account holders, that they've established that they're victims.
I don't understand what's missing in the proffer. Take the example that they give where they, so victim Decker writes a $15,000 check, right?
Yes.
Okay. And the defendants, that $15,000 is transferred to the defendant's bank account, and then a day later, he transfers it to the other account, right?
Yes.
So what's missing? We know that what the government proffered was that it's done that with each of the 15, that it tracked a check of a specific amount written by the victim, was deposited in the bank account, and then transferred.
I'm not sure that that's the extent of their proffer, in the sense that they used the one demonstrative piece of evidence to show that the other bank records would be similar to this, but I don't think that's sufficient, in the sense that we don't know what the transaction was about.
That's what a proffer is. They're proffering that they looked at these records, and there was this chain, this funds from the victim to the first bank account, transferred to the second bank account.
Well, I think one of the examples.
I thought one of your points was is that there's no evidence that some of these people weren't reimbursed.
Well, also that there's no evidence that the victim actually, the person actually lost the money, because there were a number of instances in which the participants who came to obtain the money from the bank account were arrested before they were able to get the money out. So in that situation, they would not be victims.
Well, the prosecutor made an oral statement as to those objections by defense counsel.
She did.
She said, we checked.
Well, checked in the sense, checking how? I mean, without contacting the person, how can they check? How can they know where the money went? How can they know that the money got to the perpetrators of the conspiracy?
Well, it's clear that the trial court wasn't that clear about what the proffer was and had to ask the prosecutor, do you have bank records for these 15 victims? And the prosecutor said yes.
But without more, we don't think that's sufficient for the proffer, or for the court to conclude by preponderance of the evidence that the government is.
Well, I was thinking of these cases where the government wants to proffer a prior conviction, and we require a certified record from the other jurisdiction. It wouldn't be sufficient that, or would it, that the government says, I've checked, and this man has a prior felony in Maryland.
I think that's something that's pretty clear, in the sense that that's something that is not a matter of contradiction, in the sense that either he has the conviction or he doesn't.
Well, sometimes it is a matter of dispute.
Well, it can be, but again, because of the nature of this offense, without showing that the victim was victimized by contacting them, we don't think they should be counted as victims.
So in your view, what would have been sufficient here would have been had the prosecutor made a physical proffer of the bank records for the 15 victims for whom no one in the government had spoken? Is that your point?
Yes. At least that.
And what difference would that have made since the defense counsel had those records or had been given access to those records?
Well, it
I'm just asking, so I understand your point.
It would restore the burden that the prosecution has to have. It would put the burden on the prosecution rather than on the defense. Again, it's like if somebody turns over evidence in a criminal trial to the defense and then never introduces it at a trial, they can't go in front of a jury and claim, well, the defense has the evidence that the defendant has committed these offenses or has done something, and that's sufficient for a conviction.
So let me ask you, the guideline that I referenced is 6A1.3, the commentary, where it talks about written statements of counsel.
Yes.
Are you suggesting that had the prosecutor filed something that said our office has reviewed these bank records and determined that these 15 people are victims?
I don't know that that would have been sufficient. I think that the actual records themselves should have been.
Well, the commentary suggests you can have written statements of counsel or affidavits of witnesses.
Yes, but the government didn't provide either one of those.
All right, do you want to reserve the rest of your time?
Yes, I'll reserve. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Sonia Ralston for the United States. I think the most important thing to think about here is the burden of proof. It's preponderance of the evidence, not beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, defense counsel makes a big deal of an analogy to if information were provided in discovery before a trial, but then not introduced at trial, the prosecutor could not argue to the jury that that evidence should be considered. That's certainly true. But when the standard is preponderance of the evidence, the question is the greatest amount, more than 50%, of the evidence adduced.
So is it sufficient for the government to say we've got some files back in our office and they're, you know, bank records of 15 people and never identifies who checked them or anything like that?
I think that probably would be sufficient in the absence in the absence of a specific objection by the defendant.
Well, there was a specific objection to the sufficiency of the evidence in that the government hadn't met its burden of a proffer, which was to proffer evidence to the court.
The objection was to the evidence in the PSR, which is just a listing of the
broader than that, counsel, if you read the transcript.
Yes, Your Honor. So then they come up with three theoretical objections that the district court calls speculative. The defense had the opportunity to look at these records and never says, pinpoints one of these objections to one of the defendants.
Still at step one,
mm-hmm.
As to the government's proffer, what is your understanding of the instruction in the commentary to
the
guideline on proffers?
The last line of the first paragraph of that commentary says that the proper procedure should be left to the sentencing court. So the court is the one that decides when the preponderance has been met. I think it's up to the court to decide whether it needs to call for introduction of more of the records, to see more of them.
What do you think a proffer is? It's a horrible word, but what do you think it is?
It's an explanation of what the testimony or records would show if they were
It's an offer
in.
Of proof.
Yes.
That's what it is. That's what a proffer. This is what we intend or can prove. That's all it means, right?
Yes.
It's not evidence. It's just an offer. And my understanding would be that to put the government to the proof, to its proof, the defense has to raise an objection that this is not evidence and we want the government to prove exactly what they're saying they can prove.
So I think, again, it's up to the district court.
Because before you even get to the question of burden of proof, there has to be proof.
Yes.
And an offer to prove something is not proof.
So I think there's two things here to separate apart. One is the specific bank record that was brought into court, shown to the district court, and it's not introduced into evidence, but the rules of evidence, of course, don't apply at
right.
sentencing.
I understand.
So that is proof. And then the prosecutor proffers that I have 14 more just like this, and there's some discussion about whether they've been translated at all, and this one is in English, which is why it's the best example.
Actually, one of them wasn't in English, and the prosecutor said, I think we can still figure out what this means.
Well, the first page of it is in Polish, but
that's
then
right.
the subsequent part is in English.
So what about the objection that none of this, the proffer doesn't answer the question of whether maybe one or more of these people didn't actually lose the money?
Right. So the, but bringing in the rest of the bank records wouldn't have answered that question either. This is a more theoretical objection about whether this type of proof could ever be sufficient.
But you think it was speculative. The argument made was that as to some of the alleged victims, the person was arrested before they had an opportunity to deposit the money into the bank account.
Yes. And so this, I think, goes to the 70% argument, that there are 52 victims. The government agents spoke with 37 of them. For those 37, none of these three speculative arguments that the money was returned, that it was never withdrawn, or that the person was arrested before it was could be withdrawn were
so
true.
The three about the alleged arrest before deposit, are those part of the 37 or part of the 15?
So they concede that there are 37 victims, and they're disputing the existence of the other 15 for whom we were not able to get in touch.
Did you hear my question?
Yes.
And what's the answer?
It's to the 15, but it's non-unique.
No, my question was, as to the defense objections that certain people were arrested before they were able to make a deposit, were those part of the 15 or the 37? The prosecutor refers to them as number 47.
So that's the answer to your question is that nobody knows, because the defense counsel at the sentencing hearing never identified any particular victim to whom this objection applied. He says...
But he did name the people.
No. He says some of the defendant, the co-defendants, were arrested on the way to the bank. But he never says they were arrested on the way to this particular bank, and that applies to victim number whichever.
But how would he... Well, what should he have done to have countered the government's proffer? What would have been enough?
So I think something like that, to say that, you know, if you look at this bank record, it shows the money was never withdrawn. And that's counter evidence.
And he had access to that bank
yes.
record, right?
Yes. And the government offered to provide translators as well.
Right.
And in that's the kind of specific objection that would raise a real controversy. That wasn't made here.
Well,
the district court...
Prosecutor comes back and offers this, and the trial court says, have you had a chance to look at this to the defense counsel? Defense counsel says, I haven't.
So it's true that defense counsel did not take the government up on its offer to examine these records, but they were made available.
All right. So then the trial court says, after defense counsel says, I haven't had a chance to look at these records, the trial court says, I'm not sure either. Mrs. Page, referring to the assistant U.S. Mm-hmm. attorney, says, maybe you could clarify that. Does the Citibank record you handed up cover all the 15 people you didn't talk to personally? And she says, no, it does not. And the court says, how many does it cover? And so they go through a little chatter, and the prosecutor says, but a record in our files demonstrates they sent the money and that the money was withdrawn.
Yes.
So that's the proffer, that in our files.
Yes.
And is that sufficient?
Yes.
And did anybody look at those files? And who? I'm just trying to understand what is the nature of the proffer when we're talking about the effect of this, as the trial judge says, is this is significant, because it would add, it would result in additional time for the defendant.
So the obviously the government examined the files. That's how
obviously.
Well, that's how the spreadsheet comes to be.
I guess I would have thought your answer would be, well, the defense counsel could have asked to look at the documents in the file.
That was the next thing I was going to say.
Right.
Yes, defense counsel could have examined them and brought specific objections to the district court's
attention.
And he
didn't do that. Right?
He did not do that.
Maybe we had a case of ineffective assistance of counsel.
That would be for another...
I understand.
Yes.
if I understand you correctly, there are two issues that seem to get, not issues, but two points that seem to get tangled up here. The one is whether, if the government had produced the bank records themselves, that would have satisfied the defense objection. But that's not the point, is it? The defense objection was, even if the government brought those records in, it wouldn't establish that there were 15 additional victims. And so the government proceeds by this proffer, and to tee this issue up for us and for the district court, the objection should have been, we object on the grounds that the evidence has not been produced and should be produced to this court. But that objection was never made, was it?
No, it was not.
Yes, it was. Counsel said the proffer must be made to the court. The records must be brought and proffered to the court. It's not sufficient for the prosecutor to just say, the records are back in my office. I mean, defense counsel said that several times, counsel.
I don't think that's their objection. Their objection is, even if you brought these records in, that's not enough. What you have to
do is
speak to these people.
No, isn't it exactly what Judge Randolph was saying?
So I think
that you spoke to 37 of them. As to 15, some of them, you don't know whether they're victims. All right, and he mentions these people who were arrested on the way to the bank and didn't make the deposits.
Two things. First is that for each of these 15 records, like the one that was brought into court, there is a wire transfer into the account from the victim and then a withdrawal from the account. There is a corresponding deposit withdrawal.
And so we know this because of the spreadsheet that was proffered? I mean, how does the district court know this is what I'm trying to understand. Because of the spreadsheet?
Because that's where the loss number on the spreadsheet comes from, yes. And it's also, those numbers are not challenged. There's no specific challenge to any of that, and those records were made available. And the second thing is that, you know, they say if you had talked to these victims, that would be enough. But just to be clear, the government's evidence that it talked to the other 37 victims is also a proffer. You know, we're not bringing in affidavits from those victims. It's the prosecutor saying, my agent spoke with the victims and this is what they have to say. And when there's no reason to think that these 15 are different from the other 37, and when none of the other 37 were unindicted co-conspirators, got refunded their money, or it was never withdrawn from the foreign bank account, that is good enough for the district court to conclude it is more likely than not that the same situation occurred for the other 15, and that's the standard. If the court has no further questions.
So let me just understand, I'm the defendant waiting to be sentenced, and it's a sufficient proffer for the government to say, I've got records in my office. We don't know who looked at them, we don't know who examined them, but we do have a spreadsheet that summarizes the relevant points. And it's the proffer of that spreadsheet that is sufficient?
Provided that all of the information was available to the defense so that the defense beforehand could have examined it to make a specific objection that says, for example, line 23 of the spreadsheet isn't accurate because the records don't support it, yes. If there are no further questions, we ask the court to affirm.
Counsel for appellant?
Well, the sentencing guidelines allow the court to estimate the total value of the loss, but it's very specifically directs that the number of victims can't be an estimate. And that's
What about government counsel's last point that it's the preponderance of the evidence and given what we know about the 37, it's more likely than not that the rest that they proffer, they've spoken to, are the same.
If only if it's more likely than not that...
You agree that that's the standard, don't you? That's what a preponderance is.
Not when it's such a significant issue in the sense that, as Judge Rogers pointed out, the difference between 52 than 50.
Are you disagreeing that it's that's the proper standard?
I'm not disagreeing that that's the proper.
It's not. You agree it's not beyond a reasonable doubt.
It's certainly not that.
A preponderance of the evidence.
That's clear.
And do you also agree that that means more likely than not?
Yes.
Okay. So what's your answer to government counsel's point that given what we know about the 37, which isn't challenged, and given the government's proffer with respect to the rest, it's more likely than not that those are similar?
My suggestion is that if it's more likely than not, it doesn't rise to the level of establishing that there are more than 50, because we don't believe that without talking to the victims, you know whether or not they were victims or not.
So if the only thing that was produced at the hearing was were the bank records themselves,
yes,
that would not have satisfied the defense.
I don't think it would, because it doesn't establish the facts of victimhood. It establishes transactions, but it doesn't establish by preponderance of
evidence. It doesn't have to. It's you would agree, would you not, that it's at least evidence of other people. Whether it's sufficient to make it more likely than not is another question, but it's certainly evidence.
Yes, it is, and that would be the better course for the trial court to have followed, is to require that the bank records be produced.
But there was no request by the defense that the court order that.
Well, there was an objection to the lack of the records in the sense that the trial counsel objected to the establishment of the more than 50 victims.
Well, yeah, but that's the ultimate conclusion. But as far as the method of using bank records is concerned, there was no objection to that. Because a certain, how could there be?
No.
All right.
There was not.
So what about Judge Tatel's earlier question? Namely, that a bank record itself would be sufficient, that could show victimhood. And you're saying...
I'm not sure that it would be more likely than not that it would show victimhood.
Well, the only reason it wouldn't is your speculation that maybe the defendant got arrested before the money was withdrawn, right?
Yes.
Because otherwise, it's pretty clear. I mean, he sends $15K to a foreign bank account. I mean, I can't imagine why people do that, but anyway, these people did it.
Yes.
They send $15,000 to some bank account in the Czech Republic, right? And they expect their yacht to show up a couple of weeks later.
Yes.
Well, whatever. All right, so they send it in, right? We know that they did it. We know it was received. We know it was transferred.
But we don't
why
know
is
was,
that sufficient
We don't
to
necessarily
show.
Know who it was transferred to.
Yeah, it was transferred. It shows it was transferred to his other bank, to the defendant's other bank account. He maintained two accounts. One, am I right about this? One to which the victim sent the money, right?
Yes.
And then he immediately transferred it to a different bank account, which was his. And these records show that.
But there are also instances in which it shows that the money wasn't transferred because...
That's my point. Except for that argument, all of these records do show victimhood, correct? So is there a specific record that you can point to in the record? Is there a record that shows that $15K was... X amount was transferred, right? But that the defendant was arrested before he could withdraw the money from either of the other two accounts.
Is there
anything like that?
Under the state of the record, there's nothing that I can show.
Right, and that's because defense counsel didn't look at the records, right?
Yes.
Okay, so that's your problem, isn't it?
These
The bank accounts were in, under aliases, correct?
Yes.
And was there any evidence to indicate that these bank accounts were used for anything other than this eBay scheme?
None that was produced.
So wouldn't it follow then that if you see a deposit from the United States into one of these check bank accounts, that the likelihood is that that's part of the scheme, since that's the only thing that was going into these bank accounts?
I'd have to agree with that.
Okay, thank you.
Anything further?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chomsky, you have been appointed by the court, and we appreciate your assistance.
Thank you.
Thank you.